My name is Ann Smith, and I am talking today to Denton Parks Wilson, and today's date is January 21st, 2011, and I am at the home of his daughter, Linda Cantrell, in Gainesville, Florida, and we're doing this for the Sam Proctor Program and for the Library of Congress. And first of all, now, did I get your full name correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And where were you born, Denton?
I was born in Georgia, in Seville, Georgia.
Okay.
And but I don't remember living there because we left there before I remember it started, which was less than a year old.
And when were you born?
July 11th, 1919.
Okay. All right. Now, when you were growing up, were there any family members that you remember that were in the military? Did you hear about the military, or did...
The only family member I had that I know about was an uncle that went in, and all he did was guard prisoners or something in this country. He has no active military record.
I see, there. I see. And when you left Georgia, where did you grow up?
In mostly all over, but we came, the first place that I went to school was Levy County, Williston.
Uh-huh, yes, yes. And what did your father do for a living?
My father, we left Georgia under bad circumstances up in that one of his brothers messed up pretty bad, and a family difference caused us to leave Georgia.
I see.
And so he got some kind of an offer from a Mr. Cone, who you might have known, Fred Cone, and to run a commissary deal down there in Raleigh, a little town right close to Williston.
Oh, I see.
Which non-existence in your mind, I don't think. But it's still there. Said we're around where Whitehurst deal was.
Yes, yes.
So we stayed there, and the times got real good, and we were basking in the glory of having money and cars and things. And that's about it. My mother was developed what they call then mostly of rheumatism. They didn't use the word arthritis very much. Your nurse may or may not
yes.
think that. But by the time she was 40 years old, she couldn't even walk, Carly.
Oh, really?
So then this deal about the springs up there, White Springs.
Yes.
We'd go up there about a month a year and bathe in that water, and even went to these healers and all that kind of stuff. So all, nothing happened.
Didn't help her.
It didn't help her. I'm rambling too much. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I was really thinking about, you know, what your life was as a young man, and did you have siblings? Did you have brothers and sisters?
At the time we went up there, I had a sister. Previously, I had a sister that died, diphtheria or something like that.
Yes.
And still in Georgia, and an older brother who made 9 months before the flu got him in the flu epidemic.
Oh, yes.
So we came down to just the two kids to Levy County.
And was your sister older than you, did you say?
She's born in December of 1915.
Okay, all right.
So that would probably make her about 4.5 years or something like that.
Yeah. And how would you describe your growing up years, your family life?
Oh, lovely. We had a very wonderful time. We had help. My dad was a loved outdoors and fishing and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Had a bunch of good friends, and they all seemed like they have a lucrative income and all that stuff, and It was just lovely. So we stayed there until we had that horrible thing happen about the busted, the whole place went broke.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then it had to start looking all over, and
yeah.
I don't think they have enough paper to down there to show. Well, we went from there, but we went from, I think I went to 7 different schools.
Where did you graduate from high school?
Gainesville High School.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
We started in the 8th grade there, mixed in. We had a hotel thing in High Springs. It was on the river, and our bridge cuts it off.
Uh-huh.
But I spent a couple of years there.
Uh-huh.
In Live Oak, I stayed up there several years.
What year did you graduate from high school?
1938.
Mm-hmm. And when you graduated, what did you...
Right?
Yeah, that's probably right.
Okay.
What did you do after graduation?
After graduation, I got shanghaied. My sister, who had already graduated from school, even though she's a year late getting in and born in December, of course, she couldn't know that year. She finished all of her high school and everything by the time. I think she's about 15 when she finished all that, by after skipping some school.
My goodness.
So she insisted that I go to the University of Florida. I said, I don't want to go. I've seen these people. My dad makes more money than most of them.
Uh-huh.
And she says, well, I'll lose a lot of money if you don't go, because a lot of money, I think $60, $70 tuition. And if you don't go, so I finally went.
Uh-huh.
Against my better judgment. I didn't want to go, but I went and finished out a year there. She was working for Billy Matthews and the student union thing.
Yeah.
And she never worked for anybody unless they were somebody. And so she picked out my professors for me. I got Bill Carlton, who was a great orator, and don't worry about the war, there won't be any war.
Oh, really?
And Dr. Spivey, I taught him enough in that year that I went to his English class that he got to be president of the University of Tennessee. And at any rate, I didn't jive with it, and I didn't go to school much. I stayed out, but I passed English, military, and math, and did all that. But some of the other things with Dean Little, and I couldn't swallow that.
But it sounded like there was talk about the war and concern.
Yeah, there was talk about it, but it was dismissed, like it's not going to happen. There's nobody in academia world out there that I ever heard suggest that it was going to be in.
Yeah.
And then it's all kind of stories about the Jews over there.
Yes.
I had a lot of friends that were Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And finally, one day when I read the facts of life to me about what's going on, I still couldn't believe it. And nobody else, I don't think they cared.
Really?
In a way, I don't mean it in that vein, but...
But they kind of didn't want to...
They weren't alarmed. That's a better phraseology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you want to think it's somewhere far away and that it won't affect you.
No, there's an ocean on one side, ocean on the other side.
That's right.
That's what Bill Carlin, and he was a fantastic speaker.
Yes.
I mean, really good.
Uh-huh. And so after you finish 1 year at the university...
Well, about that time, I worked for my dad down in a furniture and appliance place, and antiques from all these things were being built up north, I-75s and all that stuff, and poor some of the marble top things bigger than this table.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, it was good, and all Am I rambling too much?
Not at all. Okay. You're doing fine.
Suddenly one day I looked up and Postmaster Jess Davis, does that mean anything to you?
No, I don't think so.
He's an institution. He was a postmaster there for years when the postmaster was a very important position.
Yes.
So I saw him up there talking to my dad or something, and he got through, and they were hunting buddies, fishing buddies, and as was a hundreds of them. And his dad came back and said, Jess wants you to take a civil service exam. And the war was going on, but not us.
And yeah.
Some of it going on over there. And so I went and took a civil service exam, and I think it paid real good wages.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 215 that took the test that morning in room 20 at Gainesville High School. And so at any rate, it worked on down and found out what I was destined to do is to take over the parcel post truck. So, there's a story in here. Is it all right?
Yes, you're doing fine.
Okay. Went down to the post office and they signed me up for that thing. Jess, as a matter of fact, was head of the draft boards.
Oh.
So, it was feeling bad about that. So anyhow, the war had not started and a lot of people did not think it was started. And there was a guy who's a friend of mine named Emory Wooten,
mm-hmm.
who drove the only parcel post truck in the whole city of Gainesville. And that's what I was destined to do.
Yes.
Inasmuch as his draft notice, he was coming up.
And yes.
So he was going there. So I took over that job.
I see.
Which paid good, and it was just fit for me because I was pretty athletic. I could run, and Jess said, you got to run.
Yeah.
He had coached me in American Legion baseball, the tournaments in West Palm and places
uh-huh.
like that.
Uh-huh.
And so we had a pretty good relationship, very good. We had something in common. I thought my dad was the greatest thing, and he did too.
Oh.
And so anyhow, I went to work in that, and it wasn't easy. Pick up the mail at your station out there and all that kind of stuff. So finally, it was turned over to me, and there I was with the job.
Yeah.
So I fooled around there, and one day I looked up, and the war still hadn't started, and this guy, Emory Wooten, who I took over from, came up this several months after he went in.
Yeah.
And he says, and this bothers me even to this day, he says, I would like to ride with you today over my old work. I said, fine, I'm glad to have Emory. So he rode with me all over the place and came back and said, I've appreciated the kindness you letting me ride and appreciating everything about what you've done today, but said, I just wanted to do this and see you again because I won't be coming back. Well, make a long story a little short. He barely lasted after the first day over there. And I visited his grave in St. Mary Gris, France.
Yes.
He was a guy that had a premonition that he was destined to exit. He did. It always bothered me about whether he had extrasensory.
Yeah.
What it was. But anyhow, I did feel kind of.
But that was...
By the grace of God, there go I.
Absolutely.
So, anyhow, I don't know what else you want to get into.
Did any of the people that you knew from Gainesville High or anybody from the University of Florida that you knew your age join up? Or do you remember... Were you drafted?
I was drafted, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And... There again, I get into something else. I was married at the time.
I was going to ask you if you were...
This is something that I don't go into, but I met this gal and I kept hedging around and I don't have a job and so forth. When I got the job, that was a giveaway. So about middle of 1941, we got married and it seemed like it was a good working deal. And so people started looking around and there wasn't anybody in my outfit that was going in. But anyhow, a couple of people I felt were looking at me or something because I was in pretty good shape. And so finally I went to my dad and I said, "Dad, I feel uncomfortable around here. There's almost as many gones as still here of my situation." He said, "I think I should maybe think about enlisting." "Oh, no, you know, they drew a number, and you don't need to enlist in anything. They got plenty of them." So that was my dad. That wasn't good enough. So I went to see Davis, the postmaster. And I said, "Mr. Davis," and I had high respect for this man. His answer was almost a carbon copy of what my father's was. And he's head of the draft board.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's head of the one that I was in. There was two draft boards. But he said, "No, you'll get your call sooner or later." So I went back and so I went back and took his word for it. And then it looked like it was, then that wasn't quite as good as I wanted, so I wrote the draft board and asked him about when I would be drafted. Because there was more of my friends that weren't drafted than were drafted at the time. And they wrote me back and said, "You'll be drafted, you'll get your draft notice in September."
Of 41?
No, we're up to 42 now. The war didn't start till 42 practically.
Okay, so September 42.
Yeah. And cut that thing a minute. The September not right, that I'd be get a draft notice in October.
Okay.
So I was looking for it, and it didn't come. October came, November, and December. Still no draft notice. January, February, and March, and I got greetings.
Greetings.
Many, many, many years after that, I ran into Jess over there at a funeral in Newberry, and I had, I had played baseball. He was, in addition to being my friend, my father's friend, a fishing, hunting companion, all that stuff, he was running the American Legion baseball junior thing, is all we had, really. And I had gone down a state tournament, and I was probably one of the best defensive outfielders in the bunch. I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, but I was a good outfielder. I got down there, and about the first guy up hit one out to right field, which put me there, which was not my field. Left was my field. So I ran over there and catch a little routine fly ball, and it fell down. I fell down. The ball fell down, and people running around the base. And I said, Jess was already had a keeper there in this place in Newberry I'm talking about. He was on his way out. His wife had died. And I said, I got down on my knees and see how he is and everything. He said, "Denim," that's what he called me, Denim. He said, "I never thought you'd miss a ball." And I hadn't missed any.
Yeah.
But I reminisced about that a little bit and passed on. I said, while we bearing our soul, I would like for you to tell me something. You told me that police wrote me that I would be get a draft notice in September. In October, November, December. And 3 months went by that year and three the next year. And tell me, can you tell me why this wasn't your responsibility, I know.
Uh-huh.
And he said, Denham, there's no way in the world I could handle that mail during the Christmas rush up there without you.
No kidding.
See what I mean?
Oh, my goodness.
So what that caused, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
you can't help but think about it. Looking back,
I don't know. I hadn't lost many. The only we had lost a bunch of people that I know, in mostly training accidents. I think there's a half a dozen in Air Corps from Gainesville.
Yeah.
That crashed out here, up down at Love Field or wherever. However, so I went back, and it wasn't long before I got my draft notice. Well, it was a good while after that. And so I got my draft notice and went over to Camp Blandin.
Yes, and when was that?
That was be 1943,
maybe?
March, I think.
All right. In 1943?
I think that was right.
All right. And you went to Camp Blanding for your basic training?
No. I went to Camp Blanding with about 40 guys from this area, about 25 of them from Gainesville.
Uh-huh.
Within 1 week, everybody had shipped out except me. 1 week. A month later, I'm still over there.
Really?
So I finally got... And some of the most hilarious things you've ever seen about KP and shooing birds and Victory Gardens and things like that. I could go on for a week about that, but I won't. But finally, I had been invited. I knew a lot of guys here that were in the University of Florida deal out there for what I call horse soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And they pulled the old horse-drawn French 75s. That probably didn't exist after your time
uh-huh.
started.
Uh-huh.
But they were all giving me advice. Don't ask questions. Don't do this. Don't do that. The only thing in the world you can do to help yourself is your commanding officer says if he has an operation for piles, maybe... cut half of your nose off, you do all right, things of that nature.
Uh-huh.
So anyhow, finally I got nerve enough to back up to one of the guys there, enlisted man. He looked around like that when I asked him a question about what's going on, why uh-huh. are all these other guys gone? He fidgeted around a little bit and he says, well, the only thing I can tell you is that something probably going to be in good for you because you made the highest grade on that test.
Really?
And so I said, oh my God, I knew there was something the matter. So I stayed there a little bit longer and found out that, finally by working around, found out that this is the ASTP program, which you may or may not have ever heard of. But there wasn't any openings, so there's no school to go to or anything. So there I went to the infantry at Camp Joseph T. Robinson in Arkansas.
What does ASTP stand for?
Army Specialized Training Program.
Okay.
But this doesn't surface yet.
Okay.
I found out what it was, but I didn't say anything because I had been advised to keep my big mouth shut. And
right.
Doing a pretty good job of it.
Uh-huh.
At any rate, I got shipped to this infantry outfit for basic training.
Uh-huh.
And I went in like an eager beaver, and this is a bunch of guys getting ready to get trained to go join some outfit to go
yeah.
with. And so I was bucking, you don't know what that means, but anyhow I was really working hard to impress somebody.
Sure.
So I was losing. I lost about 20 pounds. I could hit the ground pretty hard, and my rifle would come around, and Arkansas was a bad place to be. At any rate, when I got on up, it was 13 weeks training cycle. I got up about 10th week, and one of the main things that I really wanted to get was a commission. I wanted that badly, but OCS was... Uh-huh. I went to see the company commander, scared to death I was going to be court-martialed. But he was quite receptive. His name was Captain Leidenheimer. So you can figure where he came from.
I sure can.
But at any rate, I expressed to him my real desire to go to officer candidate school. He said, it's closed. I said, and then... The subject was broached about me staying for the next training cycle, another 13 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And he said if I could do that, that he would, that there might be some opening then. So, uh-huh. I was basking in glory about that time.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody came in, a runner or something with some deal, and this was breaking up. And I went in to see the captain again, and he says, I can't do anything for you. He said, this ASTP program, which was strictly because there wasn't a depot to put me in, it's got priority over everything. I said, but I don't want to go to school. I've had enough school. I don't want any school. He said, I wish I could do something to help you, but I can't.
Uh-huh.
So then... They shipped me. I went everywhere from Repel Depots all around every place. And so that was still on my mind what I wanted to do. So then they put me in a armored force thing.
Uh-huh.
I might have left out a couple places they put me for.
Yeah.
Armored force at 16th Division, armored force.
Uh-huh.
And... I went in there, and the first thing, they looked at my records, and they put me in the office up there right next up the front, and Master Sergeant was right here, and I'm right here, our bunk's right there, and they're going to put me in the office. Well, I cried, I moaned, I did everything. I was afraid to say too much, but anyhow, I was destined to work in that darn headquarters, not what I wanted. I didn't want to work in a headquarters.
Uh-huh.
I had enough of that. Every place I went before that, they were talking about me, even basic training. They wanted me to go out in the office. I didn't want to.
Uh-huh.
So anyhow, I went in and talked to the captain there, and I said, I'd just like to get in something else. He said, well, I'm sorry, this is about what we got. And so walking down the over by PX, and I saw up at Air Force and paratroopers. And so I went back and applied for the Air Force as a pilot. So then I went in and told him what I had done. He said, I don't blame you, son. I'd have done the same thing. I don't like it either, but I got to stay here. So anyhow, I fooled around there till... the first sent me down the Mexican border at Moorfield Mission, Texas, another depot to sit there and wait till something opened.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a call to come in to Xavier University in Cincinnati.
Oh.
And so I got there and found out what it was. I had been accepted by the Air Force in the college training detachment deal.
Uh-huh.
To learn all this sort of thing and so forth. So I had a very good time there in Ohio.
Yeah.
And they were just lovely people and good to me and all that stuff. At any rate, I was doing fine. I had some real close friends from New York, Massachusetts, and it just looked like a go. Then all of a sudden, somebody appears in the door And I've got that in my material out there, paper like that, said we've, in effect, it's overestimated the amount of pilots we need.
Oh.
And you and each of you, it didn't say you, it said you and each of you will go to the ground force. So there we go again. So all my options were about pretty well played out.
My goodness.
So I went back to the ground force and joined this many, many other same situation I was. Had been in ASTP or in the Air Force Cadet Program or something. And they sent me down to and I lose that chain of thought. Camp Breckenridge, Kentucky.
Oh, yes.
And I was among the cadre. Now, that's a training bunch. Was set completely. They had just come off maneuvers, and there wasn't any openings of any kind for advancement.
Yeah.
That didn't suit me, but there was nothing I could do. In fact, a couple of my close friends were just students out of this world, having gone to school in Boston College and places of that nature, and they were sitting there, and some of them had rank. I didn't even have a patch on yet. And so anyhow, as students there, they'd given us a officer's type shirt and officer's pants.
Uh-huh.
And so when I got shipped down there to Camp Breckenridge, one of the guys, they got a big kick out of seeing us with like wool and sheep's clothing or something.
Yes.
I'll determine.
Yeah.
At any rate, when I was standing out there, the uniform and about 10 others, it wasn't, all of them were not there, were standing there when, in formation, at ease, I looked up as some guy came by and says, Denton Wilson? I said, yeah. I turned around, there was a guy named Dan Tedder. He was a first lieutenant, and he had just walking by, and I guess he saw all this stuff and turned around and recognized me. I hadn't seen him since he was a member of the ATO fraternity out there, and I just used to pass by. I wasn't a member of any fraternity. And so he said, where are you going? I said, I don't know. I'm standing in the street right now. He says, well, he asked one of the men in charge of the detail, where's he going? He's going to Company H, 75th, 290th Infantry. He says, oh, he's a friend of mine. It's Captain Vogel. The commander, I said, he said, I'll go talk to him about you. I said, Dan, please, for God's sake. I said, enough people have talked about me already. And he said, I didn't think he took it that way, but he said, I'll come up and see you after a while in the barracks tonight sometime, which he did. He came from a very good family in Live Oak, and he was a kind of a more or less sickly guy, too. I don't know how.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, I got in there and they decided that Captain Vogel or one of his sergeants or whatever decided the proper place for me would be in the mortar squad. You're not familiar with a mortar, are you?
A little bit.
The mortar squad, all the positions had been filled for all of these things. No chance for rank. But the mortar squad was a little bit better than the rifle platoon or the machine gun platoon, the 30 caliber machine gun.
I see.
So that proved a blessing for me there, which I didn't want.
Yes.
But anyhow, they came and said, they put me in the mortar thing. They got to thinking about it. Came in there and wanted to know if I didn't want to go in the office. They needed help in the office. I said, please, I don't want to go to the office. I've had enough of that. And so I guess they saw it on my record somewhere.
Yeah.
Where my typist deal or whatever from high school gave me, I guess. But I don't think they had the record, but I guess something I filled out maybe. I never knew. And so I begged out of that. So I stayed with that.
The mortar?
I stayed with the mortar then.
Uh-huh.
And so finally, a whole bunch of other stuff happened. But finally, we got ready to ship out. We got down to Camp... Camp Kilmer, where I went out from. One of those, I'm ashamed of myself.
I was going to say, there was this in New York or
in New York, yeah.
Yeah.
Camp Shanks, I got it. Thank you.
Shanks, okay.
So where I had enjoyed myself so much in some of the bigger towns like Cincinnati, I'd seen Woody Herman, Kate Kaiser, and that real good black guy that was a real good entertainer, Satchel Paige, that's a baseball player. At any rate, I enjoyed that. So New York, I didn't have a chance to get out. But we had a little gal there that came in to entertain us, just named Ethel Merman.
Oh,
do
yes.
Do anything for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I've never seen a more fantastic performer than Ethel Merman. She could turn her back over there like that and sing, and you could drown you out over here.
I'll bet.
Ooh, Lord. What an entertainer. So I got a taste of that. But anyhow, finally, we got ordered to chip out. The invasion had started. These other things had not been in the way. I'd have been over there
a long
for the
time
invasion.
Ago.
So I got over there a few months after it was going, and we thought it was all over.
When did you leave New York?
I had, you know, the funniest thing, I was looking for my discharge, and in case we had any technical questions, I asked my wife, she said, I think they're in the bank vault.
Yeah,
so
well.
So I said, well.
Do you remember, now you shipped out of New York, is that right?
I shipped out of New York, Camp Shanks, New York.
And do
and
you
it
remember?
Was about 2 or 3 months after the invasion, if you can know when.
Okay,
that was.
All right. And do you remember what the name of your ship was?
The ship was USS Brazil.
Okay.
It was what I call one of the biggest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it had been a troop carrier, and plus it had been a private vessel for tours and stuff like that.
How was the crossing?
How was what?
You're crossing the Atlantic. How was the trip?
We went over. It took 9 days.
Uh-huh.
In convoy.
Yes.
Of course, the submarines and stuff were out there.
Yes.
So we got there to land in Wales.
Okay, I was going to ask.
Swansea, Wales.
Yes.
And I thought I was on a big boat and pulled up there, and I saw something up there, and it said Queen Mary.
Oh, really?
It was in that harbor.
Yes.
And I said, boy, I thought I was on the ship, but this... I think we had 1,000 on there, but that queen, that thing was so big. And I think that was before Elizabeth, I think.
Uh-huh.
And so we went down in Swansea, Wales.
Uh-huh.
And to an old castle there. I'll tell you another side story after a while.
Okay.
And stayed there for pre-battle training before we went on over. So then, this is getting too long, so I'll shorten it.
Whatever you want. I want to know all of it. I want to know what did you think of your training?
Well, it was just, all we did is set up our guns and the mortar. The mortar is a weapon that you see them now in the movies and everything. It's has a bipod and a tube.
Yes.
A base plate.
Yes.
Okay, you need to remember that.
All right. I will.
And sound like my VA psychological work out there. That's kind of cute the way they run that thing. And so we did most of that, putting it up and everything, stayed on this thing and called I never knew where it was, Morgan Castle or Morgan Castle.
Uh-huh.
And the castle itself was kind of a medieval-looking thing, and the place that most of us stayed was what they called a fernery. But I found out the other day from a good friend of mine from Wales that there's no such thing as a fernery. It might have been a nursery of some sort.
Oh.
But it held probably 1,000 troops in there.
Yeah.
So I could go on about that, but I won't. But anyhow, we finally got orders to ship out, and we shipped on into France, into southern France, where it was warm and nice and everything. We got situated and took a couple of little towns there that De Gaulle, I think,
now, was born. Did you go into Le Havre?
No, I didn't go into Le Havre. I went into...
But southern France.
Southern France.
And
we had khakis on. No, I'm sorry, it wasn't khakis. It was no good shoes or anything like that. And we got to down there. It was nice, pleasant weather.
Do you know what time of the year this was?
It's got to be... Let's see, the Boers started in 1944, I guess. Was it?
Yeah.
That's the reason I needed that other thing. I think it was 1944 when the Boers started.
Yes.
And we were down in southern France. We didn't know anything about what was going on. And suddenly they appeared in the door again. Get ready. We're going.
Uh-huh.
We went down to France. And then back up out of Belgium, just as hell-bent for Belgium, as fast as we could get up there.
How did you go? Were you in trucks or rail?
Some trucks, but my squad had a... These mortars are quite heavy.
Yes.
The ammunition is quite heavy.
Yes.
So we went most... I had a Jeep. I forgot they had one little thing there while I go. A real close friend of mine and everything, the squad leader of my squad, had gotten frozen feet somewhere.
Yes.
And he had gone back to England to be treated, which was quite extensive treatment.
Yes.
So I had the squad without the rank or anything for quite some, the whole...
Really?
The whole bulge.
Now, was this still Company H?
Yeah, H Company.
Okay. And so you were really the squad leader?
A squad leader, whatever that means.
That means nobody to turn to.
Each squad, the main thrust I was getting at, each squad has a Jeep.
Okay.
We've got, all can't ride, but the squad leader, the first gunner, the second gunner, the third gunner. See, it's a three-deal thing. The base plate is the least qualified person. The first gunner is the one that activates the thing and
yes.
turns it around.
Uh-huh.
And the second gunner is generally a pretty good man that's ready to step in case he's needed.
I see.
And so we got there, and it was cold. I mean, it was cold. I've got pictures I can show you.
I've seen pictures. There's
a way you've yes. probably seen one. You've seen them all.
No, but it must have been just miserable.
It was miserable. What happened, having been sent down to southern France, and I don't know how southern it was, we were down way down in France.
Yeah.
We had the regular army overshoes on.
Yes.
And regular army shoes. What would happen, the ones that were up there to fight had snowpack deal.
Yeah.
With a... Snow would come in and come over the boots and melt, and then it would refreeze.
Yes.
And that's what caused us to lose. I think at one time they said we'd lost about half of our troops to frozen feet or
yes.
casualties of some sort.
Yes.
It was bad.
Yes.
And some of our rifle outfits were just almost decimated.
Yes.
And so they every now and then called someone in for foot inspection. They called me in. I wasn't going to beg anybody for anything. I had my dose of that, and I looked down there and said, well, you'll get by all right. And I said, yeah, I'll get by.
So oh, gosh.
I didn't have any feeling for a number of years when I got back, nor did I blame anybody.
Really?
And because they did the best they could with what they had to do it with. But
well, did you have winter gear? Did you have coats? And
we had overcoat, yeah.
Did
but
you?
But that wasn't good enough.
No.
And you get the sleeping bag. We had one of them. So you'd climb in that sleeping bag, if you could make it in there, with your overcoat on, with your
yes.
jacket on, with everything, your underwear on, much as you could have, and still froze.
Yes, yes.
So that was the worst part of my whole Army career, was that stint we did there in Belgium. And
well, did you encounter then combat when you got to Belgium?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went in a little town by the name of Wy, W-Y.
Yes, I saw that.
And it's right next to Sawin, right next to that place at Nuts. Bastogne. Right in that same area.
Yes.
And took a real beating. We had a bunch of guys killed. I'm still in contact with six of them, and still got one left. He's out. He came back and went to Notre Dame, and I get something on email every now and then.
That's wonderful.
But he writes a much better story than I can write.
One of them is a part of the puzzle, as far as I'm concerned.
But we went in this town, and I don't know how far you want me to dig in, but I'm cold. Don't you? They keep this house on 50 degrees. I think I'm in the bulge. but we had this mortar. Is a terrific weapon. They've used them since the Civil War, and they're still using them today.
Yeah.
And you drop this projectile, which is about that big, weighs about 6 or 7 pounds, I've forgotten exactly. And you drop that thing in the tube, and it shoots out. Well, you can use it, I think the closest as I've ever shot was 500 feet, which was just the other side of my rifle troops.
Yeah.
And it's like nipping off their nose practically. And so anyhow, we had the first day, this guy named Fothergill, a good buddy from Ohio, got killed, direct hit, the first day. And a guy from Brooklyn named Eck, got killed also. They were in a foxhole, and the thing hit in there and got them. From then on, it was just take care of yourself. We dug in good to start with, and after a while, we got to where it was kind of careless, and it didn't make all that much difference, I don't guess, whether they hit us or not.
Yeah.
But at any rate, it was a horrible experience. See, this guy had going into this fernery or nursery they're talking about. I didn't know him very well. He was in another squad. Went there one night, and everybody else was going into London to see what they could find around Piccadilly. And I wasn't in the mood and went over there and started talking to him, and he had all kind of pictures laid out and writing. He's a married man with children. I think it's two, and I've got the address because it's in my... They publish a division thing about every 6 weeks now, I think. Some of them can still write.
Sure.
And her name is in there, his wife, as a sustaining member of some sort. And I meant to write them before I did this to see if... To tell her just what I believed. I've got similar letters from other people. But I had forgotten she existed. And this McCarthy and a Joseph Linehan, a Catholic boy, as his butt's a Catholic boy. And that Linehan came back the first day we were there, and he said, And this is one of the smoothest operators I ever saw. Just a nice guy. He said an arm or a leg would be a cheap price to get out of there. Well, every now and then, it would bear fruit if I had a choice.
Yes.
And we went on like that, and we took the town. They pushed us back. We took it back again, and it was Katy Bar the door. And there we were. I was sleeping in downstairs in this building house with a cow, and the straw was in there.
Yes.
And upstairs, some of the rest of them were up there. And with some of the humorous things happened, they had a two-holer. You know what
yes.
that is?
Yes, I do. Really? I do.
Bless your heart. You smart cow. But anyhow, we had a major in our outfit that they claim had gone to West Point. I have not the slightest idea where he was or not. But anyhow, everybody else, when the thing got quiet, they'd go in and try to sit down and do whatever they had to do. And he refused to do that. He'd go in and leave the door sometime and prop up like that. And I never could do it. Afraid I'd go head first. And all of a sudden, those things start coming in from every direction. And he had his pants down. I didn't actually see this happen. I saw the result of what happened when the explosion hit his little privy. It tore up the thing completely. And he just barely got out in time, but they said he came out there with his pants all tangled up. I would have given anything to have seen that, because he was not a regular person. He was just a rear end of a southbound mule. But anyhow, things of that nature. And then this Pepin, who had the same name as, he was in another squad, but he was right next to us, and he was out there one day. It looked like things were quieting down. He got his little shovel. We all carried a little shovel, and he dug a little hole out there and began to try to make a deposit.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he comes up again. He jumped down in the dugout we had and got a direct hit on that shovel. It just disintegrated the shovel.
Oh, my gosh.
So he wasn't a member of my squad, so pretty well had to stay with the squad deal. But anyhow, from then on, when we got through with that, we got to... Let's see if any major thing happened after we got out of the bulge and everything. We got old.
What was the terrain like?
Snow up to here. And I can only, later on we got to Germany and the thing thawed out. It's a beautiful country. It was the most ideal country that I've ever seen weather-wise.
Yes.
So at any rate, we got on up there and the... Got everybody assembled again, got some different things, and the men came in from Quartermaster Corps Ordnance or whatever handled it. And we got our showers and everything, and they'd set up portable showers.
This is when you got into Germany?
No, I hadn't made Germany yet.
Okay.
But you go into this big tent, and they've got all the kind of clothes that you have in your shirt, your pants.
Yes.
Everything. Well, you go in and you start down this long corridor. You take off your shirt, take off your pants, take off everything except the bare necessity of underwear. You get a brand new jacket, brand new. You'll never know how that feels.
Oh, nobody I'll bet. Will. And that was after how long?
Oh, I guess probably... It had to be a couple of months.
Oh, my goodness.
It took a little while. Well, that wasn't the first time. We had some...
Yeah.
I was describing that wrongly, I think. But it was the only time we had after the immediate bombing and
landing,
stuff that we
yes.
did. Now, like I say, that mortar was a beautiful thing, except when you fired it, you could... get there and look hard, and you can see the projectile coming out. That's a slow trajectory weapon.
Yeah.
And the bad part about that is the fact when we shot that, the Germans, they could trace it pretty much.
Oh.
So we had to trace it and get out of there in a hurry or get down the hole or whatever.
I see.
And, but that was, we got those clothes and that made a difference.
Yes.
In the meantime, we had a general, and I have a letter concerning that too. We had a General Prickett, and he just didn't know how to manage anything. So yeah. All of a sudden, before we got into Germany even, they called us out to introduce us to our new general. His name was Ray E. Porter.
Yeah.
He had taken away from the desk in Washington, which I'm sure he was, with me, I'd have been happy. I don't know whether he was happy or not. But he said, boys, the main thing, we didn't get any mail. We didn't get any cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
We didn't get all this other stuff. And cigarettes, the only thing I was hung on.
Yeah.
And then everybody got a couple of beers apiece, but I didn't care for that. So we made trades and stuff like that. And so he said, things are going to be better. And indeed they were. They got better fast.
Uh-huh.
So we went on into Germany. I'm not to Germany yet. We went down in Holland to a place called Herlin, Holland.
Uh-huh.
I'm probably getting that Herlin confused about where I went to a scratch set.
Well, that's okay. That's okay.
At any rate, we got up on the river, finally, the Rhine River.
Rhine River, okay.
And Wessel, I got it.
Wessel?
Wessel, W-E-S-E-L.
Okay.
Pronounced Bessel, Wessel.
That's right, that's right.
At any rate, that was where we were stationed there on this side of the Rhine River to sit there and wait.
Yes.
And till we got ready to cross.
Yes.
So that was quite an exercise. We stayed there a good while, and nobody had crossed the river, all of our forces on this side.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, I looked up when I was living in this house. There was a cow out in the yard, and had some boys from Minnesota, Idaho, somewhere out there milking the cow every now and then. I drank so much milk, I nearly died. And living a life of luxury. All of a sudden, I see a runner coming from up headquarters. I said, what in the hell does he want? He came up and said, they want you at headquarters. I said, oh, Lord, they want me in the office. Anyhow, I went up to headquarters, big old fat first sergeant, most of them big fat blobs. And I said, what is going on, Sergeant? He said, you're going on a rest leave. I said, a rest leave? I said, that's all I'm doing now is right on the banks of the Rhine River resting, waiting to see what happens. He said, you will go. I said, I will go. So I got in one of those truck things, covered trucks, and drove all the way down to Herlin, Holland.
Now, what was your rank then?
At that time, I was a corporal, I think.
Okay, all right.
Because it wasn't, and they finally felt sorry for me. And
so then they
see the rank. The my friend had not come back yet, and he was a sergeant in the bunch, and I couldn't get promoted unless he gets killed or dies or something. And
I was
still alive, and I was happy for it because he was a good friend of mine, old Nick Nicholson. And so anyhow, I went to Herlin, Holland.
This, all right.
This will take a little while, but
that's fine.
Okay. And I got down there, and they had some nice billets. I have no idea how far Herlin, Holland was from where I left at the Rhine River to go down there for a rest leave, with parentheses. So I went there, and this was a nice-looking town. It was a very nice-looking town. So I said, I got to lay down for a while and got my feet grounded pretty well. Decided to walk uptown, so I walked up to town, and there was something, a buzz going on. There was something big that's happening, I guess. I don't know what it was. So I finally found somebody down there, I said, that could speak English.
Yes.
And says, I said, what am I? He said, the Queen, the Queen. I said, the Queen? He said, yeah, she's coming to town. The first time she's been on the continent since the war started. So I said, you know, I'm thinking about Betty Grable and a few more of those good-looking gals. And So I said, who is the Queen? Queen Wilhelmina.
Ah, yes.
So I said, well, you know, to myself, I think I'll stand around here. So I went up, and this is a gospel truth. I went up there and stood there for about an hour, and some kind of old carriage came by and came up there, and a big old fat washerwoman, we'd call them. It was Queen Wilhelmina.
Is that right?
And people over there swooning all over, and girls screaming, and men. It's their queen. So I said, the hell with this. So I saw her, and I went back to this place we were staying, a Stars and Stripes magazine, a newspaper thing was on the table, and I picked it up, and I said, this is disgusting. This is my feeling. And I started reading, and it says Frank Sinatra. They had a little picture there, and how the girls in New York, or wherever he was, were swooning.
Yep.
I lay there for a minute, didn't take long. I said, you know, I'm going back to town. If I fuss about them swooning over their queen, what about these American gals swooning over Frank Sinatra, who incidentally I thought was a good entertainer?
Yeah.
So I went back to town, had a good time.
I'll be darned.
That was what happened there.
I'll be darned.
But anyhow.
Little change of heart.
But it had to.
Yeah.
When you're quite different.
Yes, somebody else's culture.
Yeah. So anyhow, I made it through the couple of days there, and I went back to my hardship place on the Rhine River.
Yeah, you poor baby.
And so from then on, it began to be, when does it happen? When's it going to happen? About that time, that boy ran across a bridge. One of our soldiers, it was a bridge at Remagen or something, I don't know for sure, so I won't quote that, ran across the bridge that they had failed to close.
Yes.
And got on the other side somewhere, and some of his friends came, and that started the thing.
Oh, really?
And so then they started shelling and everything, and back to my deal, I had this mortar, which they were always reluctant to let us fire at will.
Sure.
Because it would draw fire, enemy
yes.
fire. All of a sudden, the thing says, fire at will.
Really?
We had just for the hell of it found a bunch of their ammunition, which their ammunition was an 80 millimeter, and ours was 81.
Uh-huh.
Our 81 wouldn't go in theirs because it was a little bit too tight.
Yes.
But their 80s would go in our 81.
Really?
So we had a stack of them, and it said fire at will. We fired some of ours, but we fired a wad of theirs.
I'll be darned.
I'll decide on that in a minute. But we fired and busted that thing, the British on the other side. We were right next to the British, and they loved artillery. And they kept going and firing and firing and firing, and we did you swab the thing out.
Yeah.
The swabs were catching on fire every now and then. It had to slow up a little bit.
Yeah.
And this Butts I was talking about, I was reminding him of that, what we did. He said, yeah, I understand there's a lot of duds hit, so I don't know, he was kidding me where we were shooting some duds. At any rate, we weren't. We saw the things hit
yeah.
and got the report back on the
yeah.
thing. Anyhow, after pounding that thing silly, and the British up there, they loved artillery. And they had the artillery going so you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
And so I guess a couple of days passed. I looked out and I saw something going on in the river out there, and I couldn't figure what it was. It was our engineers from some engineering company
yes.
out there building a pontoon bridge
uh-huh.
across the Rhine River. So we loaded up our guns and everything on the Jeep and trailer and drove across the Rhine River a couple of days after they...
Really?
Can you imagine putting up that thing? And they were under fire some, too.
Yeah.
So then we crossed the Rhine River.
Uh-huh.
And it was a lot of desolation, a lot of demolition over there. It was messed up. And you'd see some tanks blown out. You'd see some people with Americans and Germans alike, whether it's half track or something had gone over. And I've seen heads cut off like that.
Yeah.
But anyhow, after we got over the initial place, it took us a day and a half to catch up with them. They were gone back down in there.
The Germans?
Germans back in the Ruhr Pocket. And
in the Ruhr Pocket? Oh, yes.
I might be saying something wrong. But
no, I think that's right.
One of my stars that I got for combat is a Ruhr. And
What other medals did you get?
I got the combat infantry and a whole bunch of those other things. The combat infantry was, you had to be a combat soldier to get that.
Sure.
I got a Bronze Star, which was I got later, and a Good Conduct Medal.
I can believe that.
And there's a whole bunch of others. My daughter there was down in Cedar Key a couple of years ago, and they got all these things out unbeknownst to me and made a frame a little bit, it's bigger than that.
Oh, how wonderful.
They put all the medals on there and everything.
Oh, how wonderful.
One of the worst things on there, and I've got to rectify that, I've got something for some kind of combat in Mexico. And I was been in Mexico, but never was any. So I've got to get that before somebody catches me on that. Leave my PFC, my corporal, the sergeant stripes are all there.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And a whole bunch of other things are there. And if somebody said, why you got so many? And they put everything they could find in the way of rank, which I didn't have any harder.
Yeah.
I said, well, they tore them off every once in a while when you misbehave and had to work to get them back. But,
well, so you, after you crossed the Rhine, did you feel like you had a lot of American support?
We were disgusted completely. What happened, you're a historian, I'm sure. What happened, we had a president who didn't know where he was.
Uh-huh.
Winston Churchill had his hands full at home even. The Stalin was a non-factor. But they had gotten together there and made a pact that we were not to go across that river up there. We had to wait the Elbe River.
Oh, really?
That's what disgusted us. We had to stay this side of the Elbe River.
I see.
And which brought up another another thing. And because the Russians wanted to take that next to Berlin.
Yes.
Which was the most, that was weird.
Yes.
But Roosevelt's absolutely corpse, and I don't know if he'd been well if he'd have known the difference.
Yeah.
But he was one of my gods almost, and Winston Churchill was too, so I hate
sure.
to criticize them, but they were outmoded when that came. So they had to stay there, and we crossed the Rhine and stayed there for a good while and fought a little bit in another battle there. And everybody was looking to get to Berlin. They wanted to get to Berlin and take their knives and do a little operating on Adolf Hitler's bunch and so forth.
I bet.
That's all we want. That's all they talked about at night.
Yeah.
So then we couldn't go. That veteran service officer I was a veteran service officer too for a while in Gainesville. And the guy that took my place, Jim Lynch.
Yes.
You know Jim Lynch?
I do.
He's very very nice guy. And I went down and talked to him one day. They wanted to introduce him to World War II, which I didn't want to fool with that. But anyhow, I got talked into it and went down there. He said, I forgot, Teddy, you were the ones I want to introduce down in front at that Veterans Park.
Yes.
You're one of them I want to introduce. So anyhow, I went down there. He started telling about, I think before I got down there, he was telling a brief bio, and he said, this is Denton Wilson, said he was in the Bulge over there, and he said he never did get to cross the river. And I remember now when I had a brief interview with him before I went there, that he'd asked me if I ever got across the river. I thought he was talking about the Elbe. I thought everybody had crossed the Rhine River.
Yeah.
And he said, never got across the Rhine River. But anyhow, that was just an aside I wanted.
Yeah, that was a misunderstanding, big time.
A little more accurate with something like that. But then he's retired now, and I haven't seen him since then.
Yeah, I had heard that he had left that.
Oh, he was what?
That he had left that job.
And he was well suited for it. I guess I was in there about 4 years or maybe five.
I
ran that office, and it was three or four after him, that after me, they got there before he got there. He's a relatively young guy. And
well, when you were in some of those battle situations, were you aware of some of the soldiers that psychologically couldn't handle a battle? And
Not firsthand. I heard a lot of reports. We had one guy who was a staff sergeant that accidentally shot himself in the knee with an M1 rifle. That's pretty active stuff there.
Yeah.
And he went home, of course. One other little thing I've mentioned, there's a little Jewish boy named Strassman. He wasn't all that much of a soldier, but he's a nice guy, and he could speak into Dutch, which they were real happy.
Sure, that would help.
And so we were just before we crossed the Rhine River now. He was out there, and all of a sudden we looked up and saw all these German soldiers coming. I can see right now just playing that big old overcoat.
Yeah.
On the one carrying the thing, waving like
yes.
There's probably 50 behind him. And he was waving that thing.
And they were surrendering?
We were engrossed by watching that. We were some half a mile from there. We were all a bunch of civilians there, and I was with other things. And all of a sudden, they started zeroing on us. And so there was a guy named O'Toole, the only guy I ever knew from Rhode Island, was skinny guy. He was a staff sergeant, but he looked like he'd be scared if a frog jumped. But he was a heck of a nice guy. And it hit Strassman, and he started screaming, and I was in the middle of the cellar. And I had 20 people on this side, 20 on the other. I gave it a little thought of trying to get back out, but I couldn't have made it, I don't think. And looked up, and he was out there almost impervious to the thought that he could get hit. And he had picked up Strassman and brought him on into the cellar. And he's lying there, and I went up, and I liked the guy. He came on up, and they pulled his sock down, everything, and he had taken a hit here. Looked like about half of the calf was gone. And we were all just in shock over the thing. And he was concerned. He said, I see you guys in Brooklyn.
He knew he was going home.
Yeah, he knew he had to go home.
Yeah.
I never did find out or never knew whether he fully recovered or not.
Yeah.
But I had this other Jewish boy could speak French. He could speak that Belgian thing, that dialect that goes along with it. He could speak every language you could think of that came to my outfit just before we got in Germany to in some good fighting over there.
Uh-huh.
And what happened is he had come over here and decided the city life was more fun than that fighting. So he went to Paris, stayed in Paris all over the place, most of the war.
Is that right?
They made some kind of deal with him. Instead of court-martialing, they'd hold that in abeyance and see how he came out with the fighting outfit. And we were, he was in my squad there, and or he was one of the most valuable men I ever saw.
Really?
And he could speak, good looking. He could work up things pretty easy.
Uh-huh.
And I went several places with him, and to Paris, where he knew every way around, and back to several places. That's just an example of somebody you run into that
yeah.
you like.
Well, it sounds like you had some interaction with civilians, too.
See, it's a difference if you're down there with the guys.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, I went got to go into Paris several times. And then it came time to what they put us in what they call a tent city.
Yes.
Now, this whole thing worked on points. You got a certain amount of points for combat. You got a certain amount for the months that you served, the months that you had served, and all that was a point system
mm-hmm.
for the purpose of redeployment. So, of course, Air Force, every time they cranked up their plane, they claimed they got another 5 points or something, but our points were hard to get.
I bet.
And the put us in what they call a tent city.
Uh-huh.
And this would get this is almost like a nightmare, almost like I'm repeating myself. But all they had to do there is get in this tent tent city, which incidentally was named Camp St. Louis. They named the old Camp Lucky Strike, Camp St. Louis,
yeah.
and all those names, and Camp
yeah.
this, that, and the other. And I was lying down there, and we were playing volleyball and doing nothing but loaf and going into town whenever we could, maybe to Reims every now and then or someplace, and then to Paris on a longer trip.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, that famous face emerged from in my doorway. I looked up. Sergeant Wilson, I said, yes, sir. I thought I was going to get a medal. He said, they want you up at headquarters right now. I said, well, I'll be there, toot sweet. I went up and guess what? They said, we are short and very short, and we need you desperately in this office up here. In this.
Oh, not again.
Yeah. So I said, okay, what could I say? So they set me down at the typewriter, and I was going to town pretty good. And I have to be presumptuous when I say I was about the best I had. And so there was a Sergeant Reeves in there, who never had been in contact, but he's in charge of the whole thing, and we had a full colonel in charge of the office there, Colonel Gower, G-O-W-R, one of the nicest, best-smoking generals he's a colonel. Did
uh-huh.
I say general?
Uh-huh.
Scratch.
Colonel?
He was a colonel.
Okay.
Full colonel.
And you said he spelled his name
G-O-W-E-R, I believe is correct.
Uh-huh.
So anyhow, this is not my 75th Division. This is a redeployment thing.
Okay.
So after I stayed there 2-3 days, old Sergeant Reeves says, I like the work you're doing. Says, I'm going to see what I can do for you. I can do it. So we had a captain in there who was an adjutant who was a banker when he went in, and I used to kid him about, why in the world would you want to get out of here when I know you're making more money here than you're making the bank? He said, I can't take it anymore. That kind of banner we had.
Sure.
It was a pretty close. And so, anyhow, here Reeves came in with that deal, and he promoted me to sergeant right there on the spot. And the adjutant said, "Can you do it?" He said, "Yeah, I can do whatever I want to." And so that nobody had gotten killed in my outfit ahead of me, so that's the only way I could have got it.
Yeah.
So anyhow, went in, and I guess I did a creditable job. And so the thing began to break up, get smaller. And they began to ship out and ship out, and I'm still there shipping out. But anyhow, just before that, there's that Floyd Nicholson, who was my squad leader from the word go, and not at the Bulls.
Yeah.
I went into Paris one time. I was walking down the street there by myself, and there was a photo shop there. And I said, "You know, I haven't had one of these things made in 10 years. I think I'll go in there and get my picture taken and pick it up next time when I come into Paris." So the guy was there in Paris, very gracious, put me down and took a couple of pictures and so forth. And he said, "Next time you come in, you come by and get it." Well, the guy, I guess he was desperate for something in his window, but this Nick, who was down there playing, he's down there still playing volleyball and stuff like that, doing a thing. He had no talents except for that. So he was in our hut right there one day, and he's over here like this, and he's looking around, carrying on his great kitter. And he says, "I think I saved your life." "That's the ugliest looking old slut I ever saw in my life. And I had to take this away from her." There was my picture.
Really?
Back there right outside of Reims. Well, I had to work that one out.
I bet.
But anyhow, that's the kind of thing went. Then this Butts wrote the company newspaper. He and I were real close and still are. And
well, now,
there was something else that I wanted to mention. I can't think right now. It might drift by.
Yeah, it'll come back. I was going to say, was there a story, something about a communication line breaking?
That was back up in Y. That
okay.
was way back. I
okay.
went to Hell's Half Acre. As I aforementioned, I'm shaking all over. This is the coldest house I've ever lived
in. Are you cold?
Like, almost like the building Bulls.
You want to put my, this is just kind of a little rain jacket.
Is that my rain jacket? Is it blue?
No, this one is mine. You want me to see if yours is?
If you will.
All right, I'll put this on.
Put it on hold.
I think I had asked you.
You were, okay, I know where you were.
Do you?
You were talking about the wire deal.
Yes.
Okay, this was not an earth-shattering thing, but see, I'm there in charge of the squad, and also I'm the first gunner. I'm the one that activates and aims
and
decides what kind of distance you go and
I remember
what happens and all this kind of jazz. At any rate, all of a sudden one day, it was pounding pretty hard. And one of the runners came back around the other side and told me to send a couple of men to check the wires they had blown out. And what happened is you got your orders right here in a Mickey Mouse telephone that you might have had when you were a little girl playing with it.
Yes.
And it goes, two wires go up to the forward observer, which is about 100,
yes,
in this case about 150 feet up the hill in an old house, and they would tell us where we were firing wrong or right,
yes,
or something, and right 20, left 20. At any rate, they would adjust the fire and detect the enemy troops coming or whatever.
Yes.
And so I turned around, and I had one guy named Potvine. He's a guy from up in New York or somewhere. It doesn't matter what his name was. But he was a company Pickpocket, I think. They had a bad reputation. Had another old guy from Texas who, whatever, it's your time, it's your time. He didn't want to dig in or all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I told them to go check that wire. They just looked at me and walked off.
Down
the road. Well, I was faced with one thing of getting the thing phone fixed.
Yes.
Or having a big rhubarb litter with them, which I didn't want.
Yes.
Which I maybe did wrong. And so I said the best, and the shells were coming in pretty much, and I somehow wasn't scared. I got down on my back and crawled in the snow and got on up there. The thing probably might have been 100 yards. I doubt it was any more than that.
Yeah.
And got up there and found out that the wire had been blown in two, one of them.
Uh-huh.
Right next to the dugout that they could have looked out the window, which they couldn't because they were firing.
Yes.
They'd have seen it.
Yeah.
So I didn't think about repercussions. I got back and I felt good that I had done this.
Yes.
And I got chewed out for leaving my gun. I got a perfect second gunner. He was really good and left him with my gun, but I got chewed out for leaving my gun. So, I mean, not severely,
but even
a slight reprimand to me is a chewing out.
Yeah.
So that's what that was talking about.
I have an interview with someone about a year ago, and he talks about being almost in the same part of the world.
Really?
And one of the things, well, his job was to run the line, and he would take it up. He had one assistant.
Well, they had two types of lines. One of them, this one I'm talking about, is probably not the one he runs. He
really?
Had one that you wind up, it went a good distance.
Yes.
This was a real little Mickey Mouse. You might have pulled one.
Oh, you're probably right.
And we talked to them up there.
I see.
It was just activated by practically nothing.
I see.
But the one you talk about probably they carried a thing on their back.
That's right. That's right.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Well, now.
Where did I go?
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, some of this was over the holidays, over Christmas, wasn't it? Some of this fighting?
Oh, God. Christmas of 1944.
That's what I thought.
This was the greatest. Every plane that we had was put in the air.
Yeah.
And we have some of these big planes that come out, and sometime every now and then you'd see one that see the parachutes coming out, and you count up, and it didn't quite have the crew. Somebody was killed.
Oh, dear.
But then the fighter planes, that's what I wanted to get in when I went in there. My brother-in-law, my sister's husband, came out of Lieutenant Colonel. He was a major at the time, or captain. He fought one of those P-47s, which is a pursuit plane. You get to shoot people.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And they'd come down and strafe and then drop a little bomb about that big, a personnel bomb.
Yeah.
We used to look to see those guys coming. And that's what I really wanted to fly. But in Gainesville, when I'm looking over, I got a casualty report on people from Gainesville boys, and there's four or five of them that got killed in training.
Yes.
In this country.
Yes, yes. Did you ever know the little restaurant downtown, Louis Hamburgers?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, he kept track of so many people that were in the service, and he had pictures of all of the ones that he had, and he had them in the back room.
I'm very familiar with him because he's been there forever. I was there forever until he died. Then his son, he had a very nice little son that got killed down there.
Yes, that's right.
By one of the employees.
That's right.
And his wife was from over here close to Chieflin.
Yes, that's right.
And well known. And I got, I had a number of friends. I had this one guy named Allen. that would go down and eat breakfast, dinner, and supper, eat those hamburgers. He had finally, after war was over, he left and went back out to Texas and got his went into geology and got a degree there.
Uh-huh.
And I can know a lot about those people. Incidentally, that's generally where this Wooten boy would get his sandwiches or hamburgers or something.
Would he?
Kill.
Well, Louis Panisi was one of the first interviews that I did when he was 103 years old.
Oh, didn't you? Well, bless your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had great admiration for him and old Mike up there, too, with
yes.
Joe Teeth.
Yes.
Mike was fun, one of the funniest people I've ever seen. He had a son. I'm wasting it.
Well, I was going to ask you, going back to the fighting, what weapons you were issued besides your artillery?
See, I carried a .45 during the war.
Uh-huh.
As a squad leader, I'm supposed to carry an M1 rifle.
Yes.
But since I'm a gunner.
Yes.
And squad leader too, I carried a .45.
Uh-huh. Did you ever have to use it?
Never really had to. I used it a few times, but I don't think I had to.
Uh-huh.
But I just wanted to. A couple of times we'd been strafed, and just as a joke, I shot at a German plane coming over, and so did other 50 other people. And the thing crashed up the hill, so I got to take credit for something.
Well, yes. I'm sure there's a special medal for that.
I don't think it's ever reported.
Well, now, we talked about some of the civilians that you talked to,
civilian population there. When we got into Belgium, it was kind of bad. The people were impoverished to such a degree.
I would imagine.
Some of the women out there, girls up there on hands and knees scrubbing. They love to scrub the outdoor things. They generally had a central place to wash clothes and go out there and rub them down, something you couldn't have gotten an American to do to save a life.
Yeah.
And they're out there in the cold weather. And after we got, should I continue?
Yes.
After we got on over to Germany now and got them settled and we took over occupation.
Yes.
This was way on up.
Yes.
Occupation, and they were supposed to watch them and check everything all the time, which you did pretty well. They issued a non-fraternization policy. You know what that is?
I do.
And it used to be amazing when you go out there in the woods right close to Hagen or Arnsberg or some of the Kaiserslautern or some of those places.
Yes.
The woods out there, maybe 20 acres, there's gals everywhere.
Yeah.
So finally, in later time, they canceled that non-fraternization. Then there wasn't that many there anymore. I guess it's daring to do something.
I guess so. You bring it up or something.
But anyhow, they were nice people, and it's hard to believe that you could fraternize with somebody like that after having gone through hell like most of them did.
Yeah.
But you got to feel sorry for them. And a Hershey bar, for instance, was the key to success anywhere you wanted.
Yeah.
So my sisters, one of them, sent me a little box with some in it. So I just stuck one in my pocket and went up and wound up somehow in this German house up there with a whole family in it or something. I had this Hershey bar down. Nobody could see it. And I don't know whether I was going to use it for a motive or not, but I had it there. And I looked over and I saw this old woman. She was really so old. And teeth all busted out just from old age. And I got up with that thing, went over and handed it to her. The whole bunch just laughed. But that it was a funny thing the way that worked in our occupation. Those Germans would fight to the last.
Yes.
But once you got them, they were your boys.
Yes.
We never had any trouble. I think we had one incident in my outfit where an old woman came out and took a shotgun, killed one of the guys marching down the road.
Yeah.
That was a real isolated incident. Didn't happen very much. But
did you ever take prisoners?
Oh, yeah. Prisoners took me. They'd come in whatever front we were on, and with a flag doing or something like that, and come in, and the first thing they do is almost get on the ground and nix Nazi.
Oh, really?
Nix Nazi. That was the very first thing. And then after they got that out of their belly, they'd say, "When you go fight the Ruskies?"
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they were glad to be in.
Well, at least they pretended to. You can never tell about what it was, but we were in one situation there. In one house, we had this Jewish boy named Heimowitz. He was not much of a soldier, but he's pretty good on his language. And he got in there one night when we'd occupy a house.
Yes.
And sometimes the older people would stay and sometimes the younger people.
Uh-huh.
And one time, and he got over in the corner, a very quiet individual. He never said much. And they were just, these two women, younger women, just talking. After they all left, I went over and asked, I said, "What were they talking about?" They were talking about how they wished this tables were turned here so they could dispose of a bunch of Americans.
Really?
Of course, that idle prattle probably, but...
But still.
But that's what they were saying. We just wished that the other thing was that way. Now, when we got back to that cigarette camp, not cigarette in my case, Camp St. Louis.
Yes.
That's where a wad of came in. I was... Before they got me huddled up to that darn office, I was sent with a detail to check out 100 of them.
Uh-huh.
And came out, and it was total confusion, very inadequate of actions on my part and the other guys' part that were with me, several of them. I was scared to death that we're going to lose a bunch of them. They'd drop them off at different company areas for chores. Got back and checked in. First time I checked in, I had 103. I picked up three somewhere.
Isn't that something?
There could have been 103 gone.
I know. Do you remember where you were and when you heard about the end of the war?
We had just... I was saying at Roosevelt, we had just taken another town, but that was earlier than that. And I had to be right up. My geography gets bad. It was deep into Germany. It's across the Rhine River, way back in there, and then. The words came, it didn't mean much because there's still stuff going on, but they said it was over. But as Yogi Berra said later, it's never over, it's over.
That's right.
And I can remember a lot of things. I can't remember specifically where I was then.
That makes sense.
But I was somewhere deep into Germany. We'd gone... We had been hell-bent going down there. My only thought, and all the thought of the people with me, is getting across that Elbe River and getting hold of some of those Germans, particularly the ones that cheated by gassing themselves out and poisoning themselves out.
Yeah.
The hatred there was so extreme.
Yes.
Old Eisenhower had dictated the fact that he wanted everybody in our outfit to go to those concentration camps to
take
a look at them.
Yes.
I got lined up there to go, and I've seen this so bad. I've seen these people dying. I've seen these, particularly some of the Russian Polish prisoners of war, mostly, and some Russians too, doing their Polak dance and jumping up there, and sometimes their face had turned a yellow color and everything. I've seen all I can stand, so I've got out of that some way. But those people came back, and it was
just sickening.
I wish some of these people back home had denied the thing ever happened. I wish I could have had them. I guess I'd have gone back.
Yes, yeah.
Because I did love to rub that in the face, but it was torture. And then sometimes some of those Jews were trying to move their stuff out, and the American bombers and stuff would come in. I've seen half of the train out of this tunnel and half in the other and closed in the middle. And it just, all that stuff is wasted.
Yeah.
It just, after a while, it gets to you. And,
well, have you, when you got back, you know, and all the things that you saw, Did that bother you? Did you have trouble sleeping or any of them?
That's so unbelievable in my particular case. I have never had hallucinations of any kind from it.
Uh-huh.
I've never had anything that I could claim was related to it. And post-syndrome stuff, it all came up. And they'd come in my office and they'd work on their claim. I almost laughed. But they were looking. There were so many people looking for another little source of income.
Yes.
Or a little this, that, and the other. See, I didn't even go to VA hospital when I got back. And the only reason I went there is I went to see about my eyes, and they had to go through this physical before they could treat me for the eyes.
Yeah.
It made sense maybe, but I've been in love with the way they operate that thing out there now.
Uh-huh.
I'm still using 1, 2, 3, 4 different doctors.
Sure.
And I'm using too many. She tries to keep up with the prescriptions and stuff like that, and that's a horrendous job.
Well, now, when were you discharged from the service? Did you spend some time in Germany as an occupier?
Oh, yeah, that's where I spent a good while in Germany as an occupier, because that thing, I couldn't even tell you right now without looking at my records in there about when they threw in the towel.
Yeah.
And when we left the Occupy and they went to that Camp St. Louis camp.
Uh-huh.
And I have a lapse there of knowing how long that was.
Sure.
It wasn't all that lengthy.
Sure.
But I was in occupation quite a while.
What was the date of your discharge? Do you remember?
It's almost within 2-3 days or 3 years after I went in.
Uh-huh.
I spent about half of my time overseas and about half here.
Yes.
Now, the half here, you've already heard the story there of the different delays. It was caused not because I was trying to delay anything. In fact, it looked that way. If I'd have done it deliberately, I'd have been a marvel.
It probably wouldn't have worked, though.
So I wouldn't have tried.
Well, now you saw some of London and you saw some of Paris.
I was in London. We were trying to talk the other night about it. I was in London. That's another story, too. When we won the war and they gave up.
Yes.
They came and said, we're going to give you a treat. You can go to French Riviera for a week. You can go to Rome for a week or back to England for a week. Well, the French Riviera, I always heard stories about that. Rome, I'd love to go and see some of those cathedrals.
Yes.
But in London, I knew the people. I could speak the language.
That's right.
And that's the reason I went back to London. So that's the reason I had 7 days there in London.
And what did you do? What did you see?
Well, I went to every place I could. I went to Westminster Abbey.
Did you?
And I still have chills when I think about that, the history behind that.
Oh, yes.
And I went to Piccadilly, of course, and as I had been to Pig Owl in Paris.
Was there a lot of destruction?
Well, comparatively speaking, there was a lot of destruction.
Yeah.
I was in London previously when we were checking in a hotel there run by one of the outfits that worked so much with us. And the desk man was signing things for me, and one of those things hit not too far away.
Uh-huh.
One of the rockets.
Oh, yeah?
And I don't think he missed a bounce. It shook me up and scared me, but it didn't get him. They had that rocket deal, and also had what they call a buzz bomb. You ever heard of a buzz bomb?
I've heard of it, but I don't know.
That sound like, you ever heard of Model T run?
Yeah.
That sound like up there in the air, this little thing is barely moving, like a Piper Cub, only Piper Cub would go faster than it. It's just coming over us, and we're troops down there. You never know when that thing's going to give out a fuel and drop.
I see.
It was designed to give out at a certain place.
At a certain level.
Sometimes the fuel was used up, and every now and then one of them would drop. Well, it was loaded with this kind of destruction that you have in the United States now every now and then.
I'll be darned.
But it was a really cheapy way to build it, but it was effective to scare you to death.
I imagine.
The rocket would hit, there's quite a bit of... but they had, even in Germany, I don't know how those people, I've seen only pictures of that, enduring and Aachen and all those towns, how they could ever put that back together. But I've seen pictures where they did.
Yeah.
It was just, the people over there are industrious type people, they work hard, and I don't know how they could ever let something like Adolf Hitler's munch get hold of that.
Yeah, you have to wonder.
But they did. That's the...
Well, and then when you were occupying, you probably saw a lot of the displaced persons.
Oh, gosh, yeah. See, we were right down there, and this is a horrible thought here, too. We're getting, every now and then, back up there, our mess was not good.
Yeah.
The food. So we got down there, and they started coming out with hot stuff, and it come up with a big bar of stuff and dip it out and
yes.
Dip it like that. And suddenly some of the guys started, I won't take credit for it, seeing these hungry Polacks and stuff out there just starving to death.
I bet.
And some of them would not eat all their food, would go up and give it to them. Before we knew what was happening, there was a guard put on that thing up there.
Oh, really?
To not allow, because of sanitary reasons, as
sure.
We said, and I'm sure that was correct, and put guards to keep the GIs from giving
yeah.
them some of the food which they were not eating.
Oh.
And that was one of the down things that I remember.
That's kind of heartbreaking.
But it was a necessity, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so when did you leave Europe?
I left Europe about almost a month before I got discharged.
Uh-huh.
They went down to get on a Liberty ship. You know
yes.
what a Liberty ship is?
Yes.
It was a segregated bunch of people at that time. And the Liberty ship I was on was a George Shiras, Shiras. I've got a picture of that somewhere.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen it in years, but I've got one.
Uh-huh.
and there's 250 men in this hold and 250 men in another hold. This was all blacks and this was all whites.
And what year was this?
And,
45 or 46?
It had to be 45, I guess, because I got back in, 44.
We can fill that in later. We can fill that in later. But I was just thinking about the time where the services were still discriminating again.
Oh, yeah, it was then.
Yeah.
But
that you didn't serve with any African-American men.
No, well, they served, but they served in
their own unit.
They served in another type unit, a non-combat unit, which they did well with.
Uh-huh.
At that time, you couldn't possibly mix them. It wouldn't work.
Sure. It was a different time.
Yeah. But we had the bad part about it is we had our bunks, and Liberty Ship was not very big.
Yeah.
And all our bunks were on the kitchen side, so all day long to feed 500 people. All day, I was on the third bunk. They had to come by, and you got so tired of seeing that food and smelling that food.
Oh, I bet.
And everything. But finally, we got here, but there's another story there, too. I get off on tangents too much.
Those aren't tangents. Those are the stories I came to hear.
Well, we got on that Liberty Ship.
Yes.
Out of Port Talbot or Cardiff or... Anyhow, we got back on the thing.
Did you leave from France?
No, we left from back in England there.
In England.
Wales, I guess.
Okay.
And got on this little Liberty Ship, which I have a picture of. I had a picture of it one time. We had this set up, I'm talking about the 250 and 250.
Yes.
And the war's over. There's no more submarines out there like we went over.
Yes.
In 9 days in convoy. And I think it was, the best I recall, it was 28 days before I got off in the United States.
Really?
Some days we'd make 100 knots or 100 miles or whatever. And we would blow back further than we'd go forward.
Oh, my word.
And it was a horrible trip. And some of these smart guys would say, oh, I just checked it. It gets over 45, we've had it. And the man, got nerve one day, and I went up, opened the thing, and looked up, and there's water above my head. Thinking sunk, we were gone, and it was a bad trip.
Did you have bad weather?
Got back to Camp Kilmer.
Yes.
In New Jersey.
Yes.
And with that trip, I didn't want to see a boat for a long time after that.
Did you come into New York Harbor?
No, I came into New Jersey.
So you didn't see the Statue of Liberty?
Oh, yeah, I saw the Statue of Liberty.
Was everybody excited to be back home?
By the time I got back, there'd been several million that had come in there, and we got down on the dock and landing place, and the Salvation Army band with their uniforms they'd had since Spanish American War. We're playing music.
Yeah.
And we got there, and we did get a chance to see a show or something.
Yeah.
I think it was a Bob Hope show we saw. But anyhow, I'd seen Ethel when I went over there, and nobody can top that one.
I was going to say they couldn't have booked anybody.
Oh, no. But overseas, a lot of times some of these smaller groups would come up to entertain us, and when we pulled off the line, we'd get pulled off the line sometimes.
Yeah.
And we were all souped up there one day. This Betty Hutton, does that do anything for it?
It does.
She was going to be there, and we all got dressed the best we could to go down and see Betty Hutton, and got down there and found out she'd had a nervous breakdown or something. So I never liked Betty Hutton after that.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Now, what was your rank when you left the service?
Sergeant.
Uh-huh. And now, when you were discharged, then where did you go?
Oh, Lord. I got discharged back at Camp Blenheim, where all this started.
Oh, really?
And I got in there and went through this. They were having a big argument. One staff sergeant there, he's been in there a long time. They had lost his shot record.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was going to have to do it all over. I'd seen that same thing repeated overseas when he said, I'll be sitting right here till doomsday. I'm not going to take those 7 shots. So at any rate, got over here and ran the same stuff. And then I had two of my duffel bags. They weren't duffel bags. They were a cheap imitation thing. I had acquired a lot of stuff. And I had even had at one time, I carried it till I gave out, in the back of the Jeep. The Jeep would leave us and go to the motor pool and stay there till we needed it. I had a German typewriter, an Underwood German typewriter.
Really?
And the only thing different was there's a couple of letters that were changed around, so I had to learn how to type. Over that. So I had that for a long time, so I wrote some letters to my mother and them there.
Uh-huh.
And I still have some copies of those, I'm sure, somewhere. I haven't seen them in 40 years, but...
but they're stashed away.
That's stashed away and redone, but that's just an example of what that was. So I go into Glennon and get discharged, and I said, what's going on up there? Oh, they're shaking you down for everything you're not supposed to have. I said, well, I don't have anything I'm not supposed to. But I have a bunch of things that I'm talking to myself. I have a bunch of things that I don't want them messing with, like some old stuff that I bought in Belgium and things like that. So we marched on up the thing, and I've been around the block, so I just curved around the building, went to the other side and waited on these suckers after they got...
Did you really?
Yeah. I didn't want any part of that. I like Hillary Clinton about the... checking for the airline.
Well, now, so you came, did you come back to Gainesville?
Well, I came back. I didn't want my mother was just about gone. She was an invalid and had been since she was...
A young woman, really.
A young woman,
sure.
Really. But she never, she'd have to take all kind of aspirin and stuff like that. Bayer aspirin got rich off of her. And then the doctors would, something called ACTH or something came in.
Yes, yes.
And then a little later came this, was it sulfur drug or something, I don't know, something more powerful than that.
Uh-huh.
They gave that to her, all to no avail. It didn't do any good.
Yeah.
And she'd gone through this religious part way back there, and that didn't do any good either.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to see her first.
Yes.
I didn't want her to know I'm in town.
Yes.
So I didn't let her know it. So I walked in. I had written her some letters about I lost a lot of weight, and I was down to 150 pounds or something like that, when actually I weighed an even 200.
Yeah.
I walked in. I never forget surprise. But she read a lot.
Yes.
The whole time she's reading Hugo and Dickens and all that kind of stuff and working these crossword puzzles.
Yes.
And just actually had to be moved in sections. It was the worst case that I think that any of the doctors here had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a doctor named T.A. Snow.
Uh-huh.
That John Andrews, we were talking about that tonight when he was over the house. He doesn't remember him.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, he's the one that they called in when my sister got run over and was unconscious. The reason for that is because this gal had got shot. My sister got hit when we lived in Live Oak, and they had two doctors there. Neither one had any expertise in this kind of treatment. Well, they went up and they gave her up. Well, Dad got on the phone or did something, but that's got to be changed some way, and got this Dr. Snow. It came from Gainesville up to Live Oak, and did something to her that these other two doctors said they had no expertise in at all. And it was a visual there, just like this. She was unconscious, I think, for more than 2 weeks. It was close to 3 weeks, I guess. Totally unconscious, couldn't say anything. But she had the same kind of feeling this woman has now. Yeah. If you love me, squeeze my hand. She squeezed the hand.
Yeah.
Well, she was that was prior to, that was before the service. Now that
yeah.
was when
yeah.
I was in the, I think I was in the sixth grade when I left there, and she was 5 or 6 years younger than I was, or seven. So she was just about a 2-3-year-old child.
Yes.
And salvaged that thing enough that she got over and everything, and finally got her teaching degree from Tallahassee, and everything. That's always shook me up so bad, until I saw my pharmacist boy got hit by a car in front of our house one day, and there's 4 or 5 people there, and what I did was walk on into my house across the street. And I had trouble getting through the door because Marion's mother was trying to get in too. We were leaving the scene. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't cut it. And of course, he broke his arm, I think, a shoulder or something. Got a little fracture out of it. But he's the one that's the pharmacist now.
Yeah.
And
was your mother glad to see you when you walked in?
I think so.
And you were sure glad to be back on.
Oh. You see, all this business about this fighting, this war and everything is easy. It's something we had to do. But being someplace that you, away from home, I'd never.
Yeah, that's right.
Then I came back and then I realized I was in pretty good shape, and I was real happy, and the personal thing went real good for me. I got,
yes,
not revenge, but I got raised from my mind pretty well. And then accidentally I met her. And she's 20 years old and had just gotten...
This is Mary.
Got a job up there.
Yeah.
And...
And what, did you have a job? Did you start working?
I had the post office.
See, oh, that's right. You came back to that.
Temporarily. They had it held up for me, of course.
I see.
And I came back and had all the little goodies and increments of over 3 years.
Yes.
And so we got married. I was just about to finish up. Well, I'd actually gone back to work at the post office when she and I got married. And we got married, and it was a kind of a, we didn't put it in the paper or anything like that because of other things that I was, there's a whole lot of other reasons, but.
Yeah. And so after you left the post office, what did you do after that?
I went down, my dad had bought some buildings while I was gone, down there where Tim's Grill was, to Louis
Lunch.
Louis, not Louis Hamburger, but
somebody.
Louis Pappas, a Greek that ran a place there.
Yeah.
And
what town was this?
Gainesville? Right there on Southeast 1st Street.
Oh, okay.
He bought these buildings. Before there was a beauty parlor in one of the buildings, and he took the other one. And that's when we had this uncle that was up there and got in the antique business. And boy, I tell you, that stuff was coming in, and you take it off that big truck. We finally bought a big truck, and then those women, particularly the university women, the one that had some money, like Sarah Beard and people of that nature, would be lined up on the sidewalk. That's what I want. So there was more of them than you believe. And it's title Wyndham out there that had the antique place on the wall. Uh-huh. He was one of the big customers. And,
yeah.
And a couple of those big-time operators around here with all the money in the world. So we had it going there. I mean, we were making money hand over fist after I left the post office.
Uh-huh.
Again, Dad was talked it over with Jess Davis, and he released me to go back.
Yeah.
It's a whole cycle. And then later on, somebody came by and wanted us to go in the Frigidaire business. It's one deal already, but went into that Frigidaire General Motors thing and had the name.
Uh-huh.
And got that thing pretty heavy, and you're dealing with big money. They came out with a frostproof refrigerator that didn't frostproof. They washed the machine that the rollers wouldn't work right. Everything in the world was wrong with it. And I mean, I almost was on the verge of shooting myself or leaving or something when this friend of ours got elected county judge. I didn't know him as a friend very well, but he found out that on his staff was administrative assistant job.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't filled, so he came down, he and Mary and I were talking one day. I'm not involved in the conversation. She says, he wants you to come down and talk to him about going to work. She said, I can take care of this place. I said, I'm not interested in that. She said, I think you need to go talk to him. So I became the administrative assistant to the county judge.
Well, how wonderful.
And my job paid at that time an astounding $12,000. And his job as county judge was $16,000. Oh, wait a minute, 14,000.
I'll be darned.
So there I stayed until this Article 5 came up and changed the whole conception of the court deal.
Yeah.
But at that time, he had incompetency hearings and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you name it. It was all done in there. So I got a real good education in there about the facts of life and
I bet.
Psychiatrists and all this kind of stuff.
I bet you did.
One of the main ones that we had, a psychiatrist in university out there, using him, and he couldn't handle his problems, so he blew his head off with a shotgun. And I saw everything in the world happen that could happen. Then when that was going, I didn't have quite enough time to get a retirement, so I took a job as veteran service officer.
That's right.
And was veteran service officer for 4 or 5 years, the same thing that Jim Lynch had later on, many years later.
Yeah.
So I worked there until I retired. And so we closed our business. We'd have still been operating some kind of business, but this thing came along where they took the stuff away from us.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, if in looking back on any of your time in the service, are there questions that I've forgotten to ask you, or are there other stories you'd like to include?
I don't know, but this is a simpleton. This little thing about coming in to Stark, I didn't finish while ago. Stark was a town that we came in where the bus station was.
Yeah.
And so I got in, I had the aforementioned two bags.
Oh, that's right.
Plus everything else.
When you came home.
When I came home, and I got beat my way into the bus station there. And the guy sold me a ticket. So I went out there and got on the bus, and there wasn't a seat anywhere close, and several people standing. So he said, you gonna stand there with all that stuff? I said, yeah, I think so. I just gotta go to Gainesville. He said, well, there's another bus coming right behind me in a few minutes. You can have a place to sit. Well, I took it kind of with a grain of salt. I didn't suspect that maybe that wasn't the right answer.
Uh-huh.
But I got off the thing like a red fox, say a fish-eyed fool. Got there and sat back in the station. There's an old boy sitting over there with hair down to here, which I hadn't seen any of that. And he had some kind of I don't think it designated what it was, some kind of school thing, and he had funny-looking eyebrows. He was a hideous-looking creature. And he's sitting there, and he says, you know, like you know, I kept looking at him. He said, "You got on the bus a while ago, you know?" And I said, "Yeah, I know." He said, "And you got off, you know? Like you got off?" I said, "Yeah." "I got off because there's another bus coming right by me." He said, "You know, there's no other bus coming." I went back in there, and that dumb guy had lied. That bus driver had lied to me. And I've been looking for him ever since. I've never found him, but I've been looking for him. So I had to catch a ride to Gainesville.
Really?
My mother's house. That was the dirtiest thing he'd been to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Lord, no.
Well, I tell you what the process is here, is that we'll take this back to the university, and what they'll try to do then is transcribe that. I don't know how long it'll take, but before we do anything further with it, we'll make sure that you get to see it.
There's no problem.
Yeah.
I came back, and of course, a GI Bill had emerged.
Yes.
So I briefly considered that.
Yes.
And then we got together, thank God, and this has been an absolutely perfect deal for me.
Yeah.
And so that kind of put that in the background. I went over and worked at the post office a while, so I did what I said a while ago.
Yeah.
But that was tempting. Because I'd have made a pretty good amount of money on a GI Bill.
Yeah, sure.
And, gosh, a lot of my guys were this, I can name a bunch of them, my friends of mine that came back and used a GI Bill. But one little, it's off, isn't it?
It can be.
Cut it off.
Anyway, officially, let me thank you for your time and your stories and your generosity.
I hope I haven't bored you.